This is the podcast from JNS Pediatrics. Welcome to the December 5th, 2014 podcast. My name is Natalie Pincham, and I'll be reading summaries of four articles on the following topics: arachnoid cyst, surgical technique, infection, and Chiari malformation. Hemorrhagic infarction following open fenestration of a large intracranial arachnoid cyst in a pediatric patient, by Tyler Auschwitz and colleagues. Intracranial arachnoid cysts are a rare condition, thought to be formed by the splitting of arachnoid membranes during development or secondarily due to trauma or inflammation. Treatment of intracranial arachnoid cysts remains controversial based on their variable presentation. Treatment options include cerebrospinal fluid shunting, endoscopic fenestration, or craniotomy and open fenestration for larger cysts. The complications of these procedures can include hydrocephalus, subdural hematomas, hygromas, and, more rarely, intraparenchymal hemorrhage. The authors report a case of an 18-year-old female patient who presented with intractable progressive headaches with evidence of increased intracranial pressure, who was found to have a large Sylvian fissure arachnoid cyst. The patient underwent craniotomy for open fenestration and suffered an ipsilateral hemorrhagic infarction immediately after surgery. The authors speculate this complication to be a direct sequela of reperfusion injury. It is thought that rapid decompression causes an abnormality of cerebral vasculature, autoregulational dysfunction, and subsequent reperfusion injury. This hypothesis assumes that these patients experience chronic high cerebral perfusion pressure and poor local autoregulatory response. While the pathogenesis of this complication remains unknown, there is evidence that slow decompression of large arachnoid cysts may decrease the incidence. This case highlights a complex, rarely reported, postoperative complication of open fenestration. Risk factors for infection and the effect of an institutional shunt protocol on the incidence of ventricular access device infections in preterm infants, by Heather Spader and co-authors. The goal of this study was to look at risk factors for infection of ventricular reservoirs for premature infants with intraventricular hemorrhage. 105 patients were included in this retrospective study. Of those, 11 patients, or 10.5%, had an infection. The authors found that gestational age at procedure and previous meningitis were significant risk factors for ventricular access device infections. Interestingly, sepsis and necrotizing enterocolitis were not found to be statistically significant. During the time period of this study, the authors' institution started a standardized protocol to prevent ventriculoperitoneal shunt infections. Although ventricular reservoirs were not included in this protocol, it was thought that the effect of an institutional protocol for shunts would spill over into the infection rates for ventricular reservoirs. The authors found that after the protocol was implemented, the infection rate for reservoirs dropped from 14.7% to 5.4%. Although this drop was actually not statistically significant, it is clinically significant and supports the belief that an institutional protocol for infection prevention in shunt surgeries had some spillover effect for related surgeries such as ventricular reservoirs. Neurocognitive improvements following endovascular repair of vein of Galen malformation in a child, by Robin Howarth and co-workers. Vein of Galen aneurysmal malformations classically present with cardiac failure and/or hydrocephalus in neonates and infants. In rare cases, they occur later in childhood, usually associated with cognitive deficits. Although the pathophysiology of this worsening cognition is not fully understood, venous hypertension, with resulting venous ischemia, is a major contributor that may progress to global cerebral ischemia, a so-called melting brain syndrome. Other etiological factors of this decline include congenital neuronal abnormalities associated with the vein of Galen aneurysmal malformation and acquired progressive subcortical ischemia. Radiographic markers of this phenomenon have been described and include progressive widespread subcortical calcifications, venous hypertension, and cerebral atrophy. The indications for intervention once subcortical calcifications are present remain a matter of debate, as is whether occlusion of the malformation can reverse cognitive regression. The authors report the case of a 5-year-old girl with vein of Galen aneurysmal malformation who was treated with staged endovascular embolizations over several years, resulting in total occlusion of the malformation. Comprehensive neurocognitive assessments were completed before intervention and at approximately 6 years after presentation. There were significant age-matched improvements in this child's neurocognitive profile over this period. The authors believe that timely and successful treatment of vein of Galen aneurysmal malformations in children may not only stabilize the associated cognitive deterioration, but may reverse it as well. Pediatric and Adult Chiari Malformation Type 1 Surgical Series, 1965-2013. A Review of Demographics, Operative Treatment and Outcomes by Askar Arnautovic and colleagues. Chiari 1 malformation is a hindbrain disorder in children and adults in which the cerebellar tonsils descend below the foramen magnum into the spinal canal. Clinical symptoms develop from alterations in CSF flow at the foramen magnum and the development of syringomyelia. In this study, the authors reviewed reports of pediatric, adult, and combined adult and pediatric series of patients with Chiari 1 malformation published between 1965 and 2013. They investigated 1. Geographical distributions, 2. Demographics, 3. Follow-up lengths, 4. Study durations, 5. Spectrum and frequency of surgical techniques, 6. Outcomes, 7. Complications, 8. Mortality rates, and 9. Differences between pediatric and adult populations. The authors identified 145 Chiari 1 malformation operative series in adults, which comprised 27%, children, which comprised 30%, and patients of unknown age, which were 43%. The syringomyelia incidence was 65%. Most of the studies, 99%, reported the use of posterior fossa or foramen magnum decompression. The dura was opened in 92% of the cases. The arachnoid was opened and dissected in 65%, and tonsillar resection was performed in 27%. Postoperatively, syringomyelia improved or resolved in 78% of the patients. Most series, 80%, reported postoperative neurological outcomes. 75% improved. 17% showed no change, and 8% experienced worsening. Postoperative headaches improved or resolved in 81% of the patients. Postoperative complications were reported in 41% of the series, most commonly CSF leak, pseudomeningocele, and aseptic meningitis. Mortality was reported in 11% of the series. Thank you for listening. Follow the JNS on Twitter at #TheJNS and please like us on Facebook at Journal of Neurosurgery Publishing Group. Comments on this podcast can be sent to JNSpodcast@thejns.org.